that. And therefore, there is a need to reappraise its belligerent stance. Further,
Hold on now, Russell. Hold on now. I understand all of those things are very true.
Right.
What I would rather have you do, rather than reading a statement, well, do you have a question for us that we can address
right.
here?
Have you any information as to whether the corporates who are seeking a bailout did directly or indirectly support the Zionist state of Israel, and have any of the arms industry, like the mercenary industry, the Blackwater, get onto the bandwagon and seeking a bailout? Furthermore, have you any information? Information when two British judges last week were trying to establish the torture of a British citizen in Guantanamo Bay? The judges were threatened by the American intelligence service not to reveal the method of torture, or else they will sever intelligence cooperation with the British government.
Let me answer those, Rasul, and I thank you for your call. I appreciate your call. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
First of all, the idea that Israel is receiving massive amounts of money has been going on for a long time, and it's far more than the $3 billion that they claim on the front side. Basically, they're financiers through people like Ronald Lauder from the Estee Lauder fortune, or from a guy named Greenberg from New York City, or people across the France, the Darty family and others, Rothschild, Warburg, Oppenheimer. They are receiving monies from people all around the world to commit criminal acts and to support their regime. And so the fact is $3 billion is peanuts, where they're getting tens and tens and tens of billions, if not hundreds, and free weapon systems from America, as well as Britain and France and Germany, buying them brand-new submarines. So there are governments around the world that are in the hands of Zionist criminals, taking taxpayer money from Germany, shipping them out brand-new attack submarines free of charge under the guise of repayment for Holocaust reparations and the rest. And the second and the last question, and I'll let Mohammed take this, but the judges in Britain had no interest in really digging through this very deeply. The question was brought to them. They didn't know what to do. It was a hot potato, and they're probably very grateful they didn't have to answer it by forcing open the records of the torture that was meted out. Because it's been my experience through their solicitors and lawyers and advocates in the world that the Zionist criminals run our judiciary and legal systems as well. Do you have any comments about that, Mohammed?
Well, I have on quite a few of the points which Rasul has raised there and the questions he's asked. In terms of any further information and the numbers involved, one payment that I know is made annually to Israel by Germany is called Second World War reparation payment. It's made annually, and it's about 6 billion euros. So never mind the money coming from the United States. And, of course, the State of Israel didn't exist until 1948 in law. So how Germany could make any payment in reparation for damages committed before 1945 boggles the mind, but this is the kind of nonsense which they've managed to get governments of the world to agree to in our name. Coming to the issue of torture in Guantanamo Bay and the American intelligence services threatening not to cooperate with British intelligence services if they were to reveal any information, I would actually say that would be a good thing for the British intelligence services to actually say, well, you've given us a good incentive now, because based on the type of intelligence information which the world has officially received from the American intelligence agencies, they're certainly not very intelligent. Everything they seem to have discussed turned out to be false. Everything from the Nigerians supplying yellow cake to Saddam having weapons of mass destruction and so on and so on. The American intelligence services do look quite foolish in the world now. And
well, you know as well as I do that all of that intelligence was fixed by script. It was scripted, and it went and the British were as much a part of writing that script as the Americans, because they're both Zionist-controlled governments, and 100%. And you see the French during the Chirac years acting as a fake counterbalance, because they knew darn well that that stuff was fraudulent and didn't fight for it correctly. They just set themselves up as a false opposition. But the fact is, the world governments that are in the hands of the Zionist Muhammad actually helped write the lies and helped support the lies, including Russia. They know the facts about what happened, and they didn't speak out either.
Indeed, Dal. There is no doubt whatsoever that the average child who's just coming up to here doing his high school diploma could see through the nonsense which had been written, which scientifically didn't add up, was probably badly spelled and badly punctuated to boot. But the fact of the matter is, it's still attributed, rather like the dodgy dossier is, to American intelligence, and even though it was written and they were told to front it, they should have had more guts and to turn around and say, this isn't our handiwork. We will not let you front this on our behalf. We will stand back from it. But, of course, you know, considering they have this tough guy image of, you know, men who are James Bond at heart or whatever, and they turned out to be such a bunch of wusses in the end that they deserve to look foolish as a result of having the sort of document that...
But, you know, Muhammad, I think it's more sinister than that, Muhammad. I think it's more sinister. I think these people are actually so far into the crime gang itself that they basically are on the phone with each other in these intelligence services trying to find ways of writing the story so that people buy it. You know, they know darn well that the B'nai B'rith member's son out of California named Perlman, who becomes an Al-Qaeda, and they put him on TV, and then he becomes, you know, a fake Muslim. The British know that the guy's fake. They know the shoe bomber was a mind control, Tavistock destroyed mind who went and did what he was told to do. And I mean, they knew all this stuff, so they're part of the writing process.
Indeed, but it's a very poor script, Darryl.
Yes, it's a poor script. We're going to go to the next caller. His name is Kareem from Durban. Kareem, are you?
Hi, Doug. How are you?
Very well, Kareem. Do you have a question for Muhammad Rafiq?
I want to speak on the line. Yes, I have a little question, right? I was very interested in last week's talk, and I think this week's almost based on a similar thing where, you know, we have this onslaught of what we're talking about, Jewish lobby and whatever goes with it. But, you know, we seem to not find any answers to the problem by discussing it. Finally, we do understand there is a problem that we are facing as... whether Muslims or Christians, whatever may be. But what is the solution to it? The solution is we have to come ourselves to terms with the fact that we have to identify ourselves as a group, as a unified group, and the Muslims should get together and come to certain standards. You see, the thing is, we don't seem to come to any solutions. We, you know, this debate goes on and on with various discussions, there's lobbies, people talking, there's think tanks about it. We all know of the fact that there's such a conspiracy going on about what we think about. But
well, you have a question for us, though, Kareem.
Yeah, the question is, what is the solution to this for us to counteract this problem?
This is what I've been trying to do with this programming,
to
bring people together, Kareem, with the right solution.
Yeah, but the point is this. The point is this. Until such time that we'll never counteract this onslaught on any of us, Christians, Muslims, whatever. If we, as a group or a nation or whatever religion comes to mind, does not unify together, we have to unify and we have to take our morality, our religion, our good basic values, and then maybe with the goodness that we have, we're able to fight the evil which we're looking at. You see, it's just an ongoing thing. It goes on and on and on. But I want to know from other listeners too, we've got to find a solution.
I'm going to let you go on that, and I'm going to let Muhammad Rafiq take this question. Go ahead, Muhammad, with your answer. Thanks for calling, Kareem.
Okay, assalamu alaikum, Kareem. Well, the issue is as follows. There are several... famous sayings which help give us an idea of what we should be doing. Firstly, to do nothing in the sight of oppression is to side with the oppressor. And another good example on doing nothing is, all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing.
That's
so clearly, doing nothing at all is a cause of their success. Muslims and Christians and atheists need to do something. Not just listen to shows, but actually make it active. I've got a couple of friends of mine here in the UK who have gone down to the local town hall today to go and ask questions which will be completely off topic of whatever the town hall meeting is about, just to try and let people know that there are people out here in your local town who are aware of these subjects and are not going to let their local politicians get away with not hearing them. Whether it's aligning with the local Socialist Workers' Party or whomever, it doesn't really matter. What is necessary is that people do something, that they speak out.
Yeah, but Mohammed, what you've got to admit to me now, wait a minute, socialism and communism were constructs built by these Zionist criminals, as was Freemasonry, as is Common Purpose, which we didn't even get to tonight. Common Purpose, South Africa, is destroying the country using socialist values. The fact of the matter is what we need to do is scream as loudly as we can in the streets that our hair is on fire and we've got to put it out. The fact is we've got to fight now. I mean, this is something that where people have to get emotionally committed to. They have to make this their first priority, and otherwise all other priorities are going to be destroyed if they don't.
There are people in these organizations. No doubt there will be people aligned with Common Purpose. There are people who were Freemasons. There are people that were in the Socialist Workers' Party that are just good-hearted people and have no idea of the real agenda at the top and the fact that they are being used as useful idiots. This is very common. But what they all have between them, these people, what unites them, is the fact that they're active somewhere doing something. And what people have to realize is that they must become active at something, whether that's producing some leaflets and going and handing them out round your town, whether that's joining local political groups, whether it's joining national political groups. But it's about going out there and making yourself heard as an individual. If everybody goes out there who's listening to CII radio and the French Connection, if these 2 million people tomorrow all go out and go down to their local police station or their local political offices and say, we know what's going on, and we're going to keep coming back here till you do something about it. If people go out and just raise the issue themselves locally, it will continue to spread. They will find sympathy within the police.
Well, Mohammed, you have to admit, you and I, we started out with a very small audience. I remember the days when I had 400 and 500 people signing on to these facts. You can remember when there were 40 or 50 earlier than my arrival on the scene. It is happening. So we've got Abdullah coming up right now. Abdullah, are you with me?
Yes, I'm with you, Abdullah. How are you, sir?
Very well. Thank you, Abdullah. Do you have a question for my guest?
Yes, I have a question, Daryl. You know, America was bankrupt morally, and now she is bankrupt totally. You know, the banks have collapsed. The estate agents have collapsed. The entire economy has collapsed. Now, nobody seems to be talking of the contribution of the war towards this collapse. Now, what I want to know from either of you, my friend Mohammed, they owe you, is what contribution did this war make towards the collapse of America? Can I listen on the phone?
Yes, can I
listen on radio?
I got several other calls, Abdullah, so to that question, you can hear it on air. Mohammed, you know, the war that was set up in Iraq and in Afghanistan and before that in Serbia and before that in Vietnam basically was a method of, for one thing, it was a method for destroying countries that had moved outside the banking system. That was one of the main goals they had. Second was to reduce population. And so in both instances, what was happening is the public monies were used to finance it, turning over the monies to companies like General Dynamics and Raytheon and Lockheed Martin and Boeing and BAA, which is British Aerospace, and Airbus and others. These companies are in the hands of the criminals that we're fighting against. So they were made wealthy, and they were getting rid of their opposition at the same time. Not very different from what they've done with what they did with the Jewish community back in World War II, who did not want to sign on to Zionism. They shipped these people out to work camps, and ultimately they met their end in those camps by starvation and other means. And so they not only did they win themselves a victory in getting rid of their opposition, but they were able to use it as a tool later on to extract silence and monies from the world. So there's always dual purpose use in their criminal activities. And yes, the world has spent right now I think $1.2 trillion in Iraq alone. You want to address the money issue, Mohammed?
Yes, indeed. Salam, Abdullah. I believe that the amount that's been spent directly from taxpayers' funding, that's not including the use of armaments and ornament that existed previously, but I believe the total amount is just over $650 billion. Obviously, that will have a very negative impact on the American economy in that that was real tax dollars that were diverted from education or healthcare or wherever else we would like money to be spent into funding this particular war and the ordnance and the armaments and the fuel alone. Is attributable. That's not the total cost because the cost of the weapons which have been exploded and other direct costs like that, as Darrell's pointed out, bring it to over $1 trillion. But actually the extra cost on the economy as a further burden is about $650 billion. What has that done to America? Well, I said on Darrell's show a long time ago on the French Connection, I said that if the United States were to take $650 billion and spend that cleaning water supplies, bringing in medical supplies, creating schools in parts of the world that are in total poverty, the world would put America up there on a pedestal and say, what wonderful people the Americans are, that from their position of power and money, they behaved with grace and put their hands down for the people at the bottom of the rung of the ladder and help them. And I believe that there was an America that was like that. But coming back to a question that was raised earlier about how much these people are benefiting out of America, something which is critical here for all the listeners to understand, and Darrell and I have raised this before, a large number of American politicians are dual passport holders.
That's right.
In that way, as being both American and Israeli citizens, simply by holding office in the American government, they're automatically diverting power and influence under the direct control of the Israeli state by virtue of being citizens of that state.
Now, that's exactly right. Mohammed, we're going to go on to our next caller here. We have another Abu Bakr from South Africa. Abu Bakr, are you?
Yes, good evening, Darrell, and assalamu alaikum, Mohammed. Yeah, you know, I think you did ask a question earlier on, you know, what can we do to, you know, stop this control by the Jews and the Zionists? I think, you know, I have touched on this previously, is that especially the Muslims here in South Africa and, you know, the Arabs, they, you know, need to firstly divest themselves of, you know, investments in Jewish and Zionist-controlled companies on mostly the stock exchanges. I think, Daryl, you have touched on, like, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange is, you know, 60%, you know, controlled by, you know, the likes of the Oppenheimers and other, you know, Zionist
That's right.
interests.
That's right.
So,
yep.
you know, we can't adopt double standards. We've got to, you know, economically speaking, pull the rug under their feet. I mean, we've got to pull all our monies out of these companies and stop investing, you know, and making, you know, enriching them, and they're the same ones that are oppressing us. So, same with the Arabs. I mean, they're pouring in billions, you know, into the likes of Citibank and other institutions in the USA. So, I mean, they need to stop investing there and, you know, invest in other third world countries, you know, in genuine, you know, long-term, you know, proper, you know, investments that benefit, you know, society, instead of perpetuating this corporate greed that, you know, continues on these casinos, glorified casinos, which are, you know, called stock exchanges. So, you know, I mean, I'd rather be blunt, like the very station that we're listening to, I mean, they every day we're bombarded with, like, the Future Growth Al-Baraka Equity Fund, which, Daryl, I think I've sent you, you know, they're investing in companies like Anglo-American and BHP Billiton, the same companies that are ravaging, you know, countries across Africa, you know, bribing, you know, governments, displacing indigenous people from their lands for mineral rights. You know, I mean, all these unethical and immoral practices need to be stopped.
Well, you're absolutely right, you know, and what I would like to go on to, Abu Bakr, is those things are actually subordinate issues as we speak, because we are on the verge of a worldwide famine, and we are on the verge of a worldwide destruction of our national sovereignty, based upon our ability to manage our own financial systems within our each respective nations. So the fact is, this thing has gone so septic, so sick, so troubled, that our need is immediate, and it has to be addressed immediately. And so this thing cannot be growing at a rate of 10% every month. It has to grow at a 10% a week message. We can't have 400,000 people joining us a month larger. We need 4 and 5 million joining us, because the end game for this story is coming quickly. I've got a call that came in from Abdullah. And Abdullah, would are you up?
Yes. Hello. Assalamu alaikum.
Hello, Abdullah. Have you got a question for Muhammad?
Yes. Assalamu alaikum. Yeah, I'd like to ask Muhammad, can you recommend a few books which are rigorously argued on all the things that he talks about? Because when we speak to people, we'd like to be able to point out to them what the sources of what we are saying are. And secondly, some people keep referring to the military-industrial complex in America and other places as being the promoters of wars because it suits them. Are these military-industrial complexes, are they by and large also owned by Zionist Jews? And if so, is there a source for that? Thank you very much.
You want to take that? First of all, you obviously haven't been to my website. Muhammad Muhammad will agree that I probably have the greatest collection of truth being written up by books in the world. From sources that have done great research, Israel Shahak, a Jew who wrote an incredible book about Israel, and I've got the Synagogue of Satan, and we've got Nesta Webster, and we have Archibald Mauld Ramsey, we have Elizabeth Dillings, we have, you know, the books go on and on, Dr. Albert D. Pastore, Cecil Ross, Myron Fagan, Smedley Butler, General, Dudley Paley, Charles Conklin, Walter White, John Beatty, Benjamin Friedman. There are books. Henry Ford wrote a whole volume. Andrew Dickey. I've got another 20 books I haven't mentioned yet. Muhammad, you want to add anything to the book question?
Indeed, there are an excellent series of books which are available for download from your site, Dal. Books which were very rare and hard to get hold of historically, but thanks to scanners and digitization, they're freely available across the internet. I think that is a very useful resource.
Well, Mohammed, I want to state this for the record here. Before I put these up on my website, they were practically out of circulation completely. Now you'll find most of the books on my website have been reprinted and recopied on thousands of websites. So I'm not the only one with these books anymore, but in the beginning, I was pretty much the only guy with most of them.
That's right, Darrell. Many of the books, a lot of people weren't prepared to put them up. Things including, of course, the 13th tribe. There is a lot of reading that Muslims need to do. It is a sad fact that many Muslims are not well educated on these subjects, as is true of non-Muslims too, but it's a sad fact for Muslims because the seeking of knowledge, Darrell, is obligatory on Muslim men and Muslim women. So they really should go out and arm themselves with the knowledge because, as Abdullah was saying, he wants to be able to give the rest.